What's going on, everybody? John Ramdean alongside Robin Black. This is Five Rounds today. I think our topic today will be Michael Chandler. We're going to be joined on the line very shortly by the 155-pound champion who is coming off a masterful performance against one of the game day performers in Benson Henderson. If you are off in any way, Ben Henderson is going to find a way to win the fight.
You want to know what Twitter asked me to ask Mike about?
Yeah.
Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Of course.
Really?
Right? Yeah. Twitter said, can you ask him about Conor McGregor? So, yes, we will ask Michael Chandler about Conor McGregor,
well,
as well as how, you know, much of his philosophies and his training. I mean, this is a guy who went from being a wrestler to being a one of the great lightweights in the world and a multiple-time champion in Bellator. So we got to ask him about all that. But, yes, we'll ask him about Conor McGregor.
One of the things I'm interested to know is you talked about the evolving landscape of the sport and how guys like Conor McGregor and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and Dominic Cruz, who he's worked with in the past, how they're game changers. I'm curious to know if they're looking at the learning curve in the future. It's like, okay, we need to get on board with this. Or it's like, that's so far away. Let's just keep doing us and we'll still have success.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, but it's always good to be able to. I mean, I don't think people quite yet understand the level that Michael Chandler's at. Not just skill-wise, not just ferocity in the fight, not just his ability to truly access his best, but where he's at mentally and where he's at as a dude.
We're going to go to the phones to talk to the 155-pound Bellator champion, one of the most exciting fighters on Bellator's roster. We are happy to be joined on the line by Michael Chandler, who earned a decision victory over Ben Henderson at Bellator 165. Michael, thank you so much for the time. First thing we got to ask, just tell us about that experience, because any fans of yours got to witness a masterful performance, because anybody who has followed mixed martial arts understands that Ben Henderson can bring out the best in an athlete.
Man, he does. And I tell you what, I knew... We all three of us know how tough Benson Henderson is, but you don't really truly know how tough he is till you're actually in there and you feel your energy stores dwindling. You feel you throwing every single thing but the kitchen sink at him, and he keeps coming. He stays positive. He keeps a positive, confident mindset about him, whether he's winning, losing, rocked, stuck in a submission, getting thrown on his head, and that's a tough athlete to beat. You know, and I think that's why he's beat the best in our division. Cerrone and Diaz and Edgar and all these names. He's beaten so many of the top guys, because at the end of the fight, when that last bell rings, he is still 100% ready to fight five more rounds. And man, I threw everything at him. I fully left every single ounce of my being inside that cage. And it was a great fight. I think it was a great performance by myself and him as well. But I think I definitely dominated the fight until maybe that last round. But it was a great fight, one for the history books, one that'll go down as one of the best fights in Bellator history for sure. And I'm just happy to have that W, happy to keep the belt, and happy to keep moving forward on this journey.
And Mike, when you find yourself in a round four with a guy who's kept that level of optimism and focus throughout, how hard is it for you when you feel him come on there and you got 4 minutes left and you're in a hypoxic state and your body is screaming and your lungs are burning? How hard is it to stay and know that you can swim right through to the end?
So tough, definitely. But I think... you know, luckily I was prepared, and luckily I have a very good positive mindset and a cardio base that you know is better than most. I'd say Benson Henderson might be the only guy in the world that might have a better cardio than me. You know, so when you're fighting a guy like that, it actually kind of motivated me. You know, to be honest, it's almost one of those things. Know thy enemy, like you know more better than you know thyself. You know, when you look across the cage and you see him bouncing around, still breathing big deep breaths, confident, you got a choice where you can say, okay, this guy's better than me, this guy's in a better shape than me, this guy's in a better situation than I am right now. Or you can say, you know what, if he feels that great, I'm gonna feel that great. You're pretty much lying to yourself. You know, you're lying to yourself. You're telling yourself certain things that might not be true. But so many people in this life have accomplished so much more than they should have, so much more than their friends and their family and all the naysayers said they were going to, because they truly believed something about themselves that may not have been true, and they exceeded expectations. So when it's the fourth round, you see him at a certain level of cardio, at a certain level of pace, you say, you know what, I'm going to match you tit for tat. And I think it brought my level of fighting up a little bit, you know?
You're talking about sort of choosing to be great. Is that what you're talking about? That moment where you choose to be great?
Yes, it's that moment where, I mean, in every single aspect in life, it doesn't matter if it's this actual physical fight or whatever fight we're going through, whatever avenue of life we're choosing, I mean, there's going to come a time when you can either decide to be great, like you just said, and continue to pursue and move forward, or give up on yourself, feel sorry for yourself, find an excuse, give yourself permission to lose. And I've done that too many times in my past. I've sabotaged myself too many times. God has got a calling on my life that exceeds anything on this earth that I ever thought I was going to be able to accomplish. And I was not going to be denied that night, and I got a great opportunity against a great opponent to go out there and prove that.
You're clearly a man that seeks for truth, and you're looking for new experiences. When you sign on the dotted line to take on a guy like Ben Henderson, are you hoping that, you know, over the course of whether it's one round or 25 minutes, that when you leave the cage, you'll have an experience that you didn't have before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I knew that. I knew that going into it. I think, to be quite honest with you guys, here we are 4 days removed from the fight. It was definitely a bigger, more monumental fight in my career than I thought it was going to be. You know, I knew it was going to be a tough fight. I knew he was a big name opponent. I knew the amount of hype that surrounded him as a fighter. The questions that remained, whether or not he was who he used to be, that Benson Henderson was that lightweight champion. And I think it's no stretch of the imagination to think that fight that he fought, I think I brought out the best in him. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best Benson Henderson we have seen in a long time. That fire in his eyes, that no-quit attitude, that stick-to-itiveness, that perseverance. I mean, I hit him with some shots, guys. My right hand is still sore. And he was walking sideways for about 3 minutes in that first round. And, man, the guy does not give up. He came out more fresh in the second round than he did in the first. And it was something to behold. And it was great to be a part of it, man. And I just am extremely blessed that I keep ending up in these big-time, high-profile wars that people literally want to watch 1,000 times.
Are you the type of fighter that when you're working with your team, you try to come up with some sort of strategy for an opponent? Because we've heard a lot of coaches or fighters say that, you know, strategy is unimportant. Just go out and try to tap into that creative nature, your free-flow form, and then everything will kind of unfold. Or do you like to figure out, we know exactly what Ben Henderson does well, let's try to use our tools against his weaknesses and get a victory that way?
I think it's a mixture of both, you know, and I think it depends on the maturity of the fighter. I think back in my first couple of years of fighting, you know, back when I fought Eddie Alvarez the first time, I was a year and a half into this sport. I barely knew anything about striking. I knew how to wrestle, didn't know much about grappling, but so we picked apart Eddie's weaknesses and we said, okay, we're going to do A, B, C, and D, and that's going to work and that's going to win us the fight. Now, as a more mature, more veteran, 30-year-old, confident in my abilities, confident in myself, I would give myself permission. I've given myself permission to be creative out there, to think out there, to be more cerebral, more calm, more composed, let the fight materialize rather than, you know, if you have a specific game plan that says we're going to do this, 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 and this, and if all of a sudden it doesn't go well in the first round, it doesn't go well in the second round, now you have a failure. You failed inside the cage because you're not implementing the game plan. And any types of failure, any type of negative monologue inside your head, any type of negative feelings is going to shoot your heart rate through the roof and mess with your cardio, mess with the momentum of the fight. So, of course, we picked him apart a little bit. We said he does this, this, and this well, but you're going to be able to negate this with that and this with that, and, you know, kind of go in there and take it round by round. I mean, did I expect to rock him in the first round and almost finish him, but not finish him? No, I thought if I got him hurt, I'd be able to finish him, you know? And I took that last 10 seconds of the round kind of just to gather myself, walk back to my corner, listen to my coaches, took a bunch of deep breaths, and came out in round two, won round two, run round three, won round four, and It was a great fight.
Yeah, it really was. It was a beautiful fight, Mike. When you talk about where you were at a year into the sport and where you're at now, seeing that much growth in what you do, you can sort of imagine how much more growth you can have in 3 or 4 or 5 years. How are you focusing to grow right now? Because a few years ago it was, let's learn all of these positions and let's learn all of these ways in which everybody has defined the sport. Whereas now we can see over the next 3, 4, 5 years, the sport is changing and there's no single coach or no single room that knows what it's going to look like in 3 or 4 years. How do you prepare yourself to be the best 3 years from now?
That's absolutely true. I mean, who would have thought the sport would look like it does today, and you have certain guys going into the cage and just fighting so differently than we thought it was. And I got to admit, you know, I was, when I first got into the sport, I came in as a college wrestler, you know, and a hard nose in your face for 7 minutes, try to break you and impose my will on you type of fighter. And that can only get you so far, and it's a slippery slope because while it is a great attribute, you can't teach heart, you can't teach killer instincts, you can't teach hard work, and I have all of those things, but whenever I've downplayed how great of a fighter I am many times by just going out there and gut checking. You know, I've downplayed how great my striking is, how great my grappling is, how great my cardio is, how much of a complete fighter I am. I've downplayed that by going out there and just fighting like a madman. You know, so I think what you're talking about, for me, the growth isn't necessarily techniques as much as it is giving myself permission to be a veteran, giving myself permission to go out there and say, you know what, Michael Chandler, go out there, let the fight materialize. You are trained. You are blessed. You are great at this sport. You are one of the guys at the top of the sport. So you don't need to fight like a madman. You can fight with your brain and not just your balls. And fighting with my balls and fighting with my brawn has gotten me a lot of fans and a lot of notoriety, but it's not what's going to get me to the top. I'm not talking about being good at this sport. I'm talking about being exponentially great, and I'm talking about making it to the very top and inspiring people. And when they watch me fight, they say, man. I mean, to be honest with you guys, the way Conor dismantled Eddie the other night, it left a lot of people with their jaws on the floor.
Yeah.
You know? So I want to be able to be that kind of guy who goes out there and people say, wow, that guy just did something different. That guy just did something different than a normal fighter.
And when you watch that, so our reaction to it over the last year has been, this guy is a very special martial artist, and he's growing, like you said, in exponential ways that are different. Many people, including Eddie and including Aldo and many others, just wanted to deny it. And then found themselves in the cage and were like, oh, shit, it's true. Do you accept that he's doing something? When you look at that, do you go, damn, that guy is doing something special?
I absolutely do. And I think it takes the humility. I mean, you got to take the ego out of this sport. I mean, once again, I go back to know thy enemy as you know thyself. I mean, it's okay to give people credit. It's okay to say, you know what? That guy's doing something different. That guy's doing something great. That guy's doing something great for him. I don't have a scarcity mindset where I have to downplay somebody else's successes to make myself feel better. I'm running my own race in this sport. I'm going to stay in my lane, but I can admire what he's doing. I can admire what some of these other champions are doing. I can, just like I did when I was in college wrestling and I saw what GSP was doing and saw what BJ Penn was doing and I saw what all these guys were doing and these guys that I aspired to be. And, you know, I feel great with where I'm at skill set wise, where I'm at confidence wise, mentally, spiritually, man. I'm in a great spot. And, you know, I hope Conor makes $100 million next fight. I hope he makes $500 million next fight. I could care less because I'm in my own lane. I'm running my own race. And I know that the delayed gratification and the working hard now to reap the benefits and reap the rewards later is going to pay off. So I'm working hard and I'm just enjoying this ride. And man, I love to get the opportunity to speak to two great minds like you guys. And it's so great to hear the words and the stuff you guys said on the Fight Win Network the other day about me. And it just continues to prove that I'm on the right path and I'm on the right direction. And I just, I feel so blessed to be able to do what I do.
We've been told by lots of people that it's not the destination, it's the journey. Clearly, you're a positive, you're a driven, confident guy who believes that this is the right path for you. Have you always been that way? Because we look back at your career, you suffered the only three losses in a row in your mixed martial arts journey. During that time, were you still as positive as you are right now?
Great question.
No. I mean, and I think... I think one of the biggest things that I've learned now too is man, when I have a negative thought, when I hear something negative, when I see something negative, immediately it's stricken from the record books. It is getting, I immediately get rid of it. You know, I think you know, I was 12-0. You gotta put yourself in that position. I was 12-0. I'm world champion, ranked top three, top five in the world. I just finished Eddie Alvarez. You know, a year and a half before that, and I had 10 finishes in the first round or whatever, just on top of the world. And then all of a sudden, you have that one loss by split decision. You say, why me? Oh, woe is me. You know, everybody thought I won. How did I lose that fight? This, that, and the other thing. And that one little bit of doubt creeps in. That one little bit of negativity, that little bit of self-talk, that little bit of joking like, oh, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Ha, ha, ha. You know, and it was jokes, and it was negative thoughts, and it was this, and it was that. And then you think, well, I'm a positive person. I always get through these things. But I downplayed how important it was to get rid of any negativity, any negative thoughts, any self-limiting beliefs, you know. And, man, I just I let them fester. And if you let them fester, they will grow like wildfire. They will grow like weeds inside your brain. And before you know it, you lose three fights in a row. And, you know, and then finally I was able to, with the support system that I've had, the amazing wife by my side that I've had, is just able to get out of it. Now here I am, feeling like I'm the best that I've ever been. So they were quote-unquote bad things that happened to me, three losses in a row, but I look at them like a blessing in disguise, even though it sounds kind of cheesy and cliche, but it really is, you know?
There's a little technique I've told Rammer about that you almost imagine in your mind when you have a thought or an idea or especially an emotion that you got two trays on the desk in front of you. One tray is, this is a useful emotion, this is a valuable, and the other tray is, this is not valuable, this is not useful, this is not good for me. And you put the non-valuable ones in that tray and put it away. And much like training any other muscle or exercise, the first time it only stays out of your mind for 20 seconds. But if you keep exercising it, it's a minute, and then it's 2 minutes, and then it's long enough that it doesn't impact you at all. And it's those two trays of placing the thought or the emotion that kind of directs you that way.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely true. I use a similar technique. I mean, same exact thing, almost looking at the thought as like a bubble or as a, just as a certain object. And you look at it and you say, is it a thumbs up? Is it a thumbs down? Is it good for you? Is it bad for you? Is it a smiley face or a sad face? Whatever you want to use. And it's just, it sounds kind of crazy because it sounds a little bit out there, because normally we just go through our lives and we just think, and we think thoughts, and we don't really think about what our thoughts and what our thoughts mean subconsciously. But, you know, those things, your subconscious is so important. And if you don't train that subconscious to look for the good in people, look for the good in situations, look for the positive in every aspect of life, it's gonna affect you negatively. And I am proof of that, man. I've always been the happy-go-lucky, fun, you know, positive, hardworking guy. But there for a while, I wasn't a bad person, or I didn't go off on the wrong track, or I didn't make the wrong decisions, or I wasn't a quote-unquote bad person. But I wasn't being all that I was called to be because I was letting the negative thoughts and the negativity and the self-limiting beliefs really hinder me and really hinder my calling. And it's I've really tried to wrangle that in, you know, as a, you know, a couple years later. So I feel better, a lot better.
Do you try to envision what type of fighter that you're going to become over the next number of years? When you think about, you know, Robin mentioned 3 years from now, how your fighting, I don't want to use style, but how your fighting will look inside of the cage in the next 3 years?
Yeah, I do, and I think that's another maturity too. I think to be able to look at it, like look at your life almost like a movie, you know, look at your life like a movie, and you really are the director. You are the director of this story. You are, you know, you've heard the term fake it till you make it, you know. I mean, so many people have gone out and done great things because, not that they necessarily thought they were better than somebody or thought they were better than people, but it's okay for me to look at myself like, Michael, you are the greatest fighter in the world. You have been endowed with some amazing gifts. You have been You have been put in a situation to succeed, and not just succeed, but exceed abundantly and overly and abundantly more than you ever thought or could ever thought or imagined, you know? And it's, I look at the fighting style that I want to have, and I want to have that confident, composed, defense-oriented. I would say defense-oriented. I'm always going to be an offensive fighter, but I have completely negated defense in the past and fought with reckless abandon. But I want to change that. I want to protect myself because, you know, I thought it was kind of, you know, not very tough to protect yourself in the first couple of years of your fighting. You know, you just want to go out there and slug it out. But, you know, being able to watch some boxing, being able to watch some of these guys in mixed martial arts, I mean, that slip and left hand that got Conor hit Eddie with, I mean, that defense, that was defense, and that was that was cool, and that was dominant, you know? So I look at myself like I'm going to be calm, composed, equally as explosive, and just a confident fighter who's going to mix the striking, the wrestling, kickboxing, submissions, and just be dangerous from every single area and just believe in myself more than I believe in anything in this entire world.
Mike, do you make the connection now, you're happy in your life, you're successful, with kind of the journey of learning martial arts? First you learn some techniques, then you learn how to move your body, and then you learn some detailed things that way. Then you work on mindset, and ultimately, no matter how it goes, if you study martial arts long enough, you end up studying yourself, and you end up thinking about philosophy. And have you connected where you are in your life to the journey of being a martial artist?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, especially when you know it's your calling. You know, me, I'm lucky enough and fortunate enough to be able to call this my job. I mean, it's crazy that I can, you know, do what I'm doing right now and be able to talk to you guys and be put on a platform and then make money and make a living for my wife and my future kids by doing what I'm doing and being a professional athlete, you know. So, but aside from the fact that I know I'm doing what I'm called to do and it's my purpose on this earth, for the time being, yes, you do learn so much about yourself and even, you know, martial arts for people who are getting into martial arts, it's going to change your life. For me, it started with wrestling, you know, wrestling, getting outside of your comfort zone, pushing yourself to limits to where most people could only imagine going to, that point where you want to puke, but you keep going, that point where you almost pass out, but you keep going, that point where you want to eat another meal, but you know you have to be disciplined and you have to forego the reward now to have the reward later and have that delayed gratification. The amount of discipline and desire and the amount of things that I've learned over the course of my athletic career during wrestling, high school wrestling, college wrestling, and now mixed martial arts even more. Now you throw money into it and you throw a little bit of notoriety into it. You throw a little bit of power into it. You throw a little bit of ego into it. And then you really find out about yourself. You know, that's one of the things that I've realized too is I've been given an opportunity and I've been given some power and a little bit of platform. Am I going to use it for good or am I going to be self-absorbed? Am I going to think about myself more than I think about others? Am I going to be faithful to my wife and to my friends, my family, the people that have stuck by me, you know? So for me, it's been such a learning experience and it's, you know, I probably sound like I'm over here on my soapbox or whatever.
No, not at all.
I love it.
I just feel so great about where life is, and like you said, it all goes back to this mixed martial arts journey and learning so much about myself and being so happy with the position that I've truly been blessed to be put in, you know?
Now, clearly, you're a grounded individual. Unfortunately, this is not a game where you can just be an individual. You have to go into the training room, and you're working with, you know, coaches and trainers and teammates. Is it difficult, or do you have to keep yourself surrounded by positive people? Because not everybody's going to enjoy the same type of success as you. Not everybody's going to be the lightweight champion. Not everybody's going to have all these highlight reels. You're going to work with guys that have lost three fights in a row, that are questioning the path that they're on. Who do you surround yourself with when it comes to just everything, the whole scope of mixed martial arts and your success?
You know, for me, I've always, ever since, yeah, I mean, I've always been a part of an individual sport, but a team at the same time. You know, wrestling, it's an individual sport. You go out there and you wrestle. It's only you and your opponent out there, but you have the team behind you. You train with the team. Mixed martial arts is the same. So I've always been around people, and I've always been just a natural leader for some reason. And every single gym that I've gone into now, whether it be Extreme Couture when I was very, very young, or I came to Alliance MMA, or I went to Power MMA, or now at Black Zillions, I kind of immediately there's this certain leadership role that gets almost bestowed upon me, and I have to just kind of deal with it and go with it. But I think I'm the type of guy, the type of leader who just leads by example. I'm not a big talker. I'm not a big motivator unless people really seek me out. But inside the gym, there is so many guys going through so many things, and this sport is so great for so many, but it's not so great for some. I mean, there's so many guys that are just scraping by just to pay their medicals, just to pay their taxes, just to pay their manager, and just to be able to have a couple hundred bucks after a fight, you know? It's just, you're fighting with guys you're training with guys from so many different walks of life, and, you know, so I always try to be a light to them inside the gym, and I wouldn't be where I am without the great people that have been in my circle since day one, whether it be all my friends, my mentor Chris, my guy Drew, who's there always taking my videos, and all the coaches, and more specifically Neil Melanson, who has been with me. He started out as my grappling coach at Extreme Couture literally 8 years ago when I first started the sport, and now we're still together 8 years later. He's my head coach. He knows me more than anybody in this sport. He cares about me more than he cares about anybody else in this sport, and I trust him to lead me to the top. You know, so we have a great relationship, and it's, man, you are the sum total of the, you know, your five closest friends or your five closest people that you hang around with. And I'm always trying to hang out with quality people. I will accept everybody and love everybody, but I'm only going to get extremely close to the people who are like-minded, the people who have the same goals as me, the people who have the same belief system as me.
Mike, you mentioned Alliance, and earlier you mentioned, you know, whether it's at different times in your life now, defense is important. Earlier, you thought maybe it wasn't that cool to be defensive. You trained with Dominic Cruz for quite a while. As you would spar with him over time, did you eventually start to figure out how to hit him, or did it actually get worse?
No, it never gets better.
That's what I figured.
It never gets better, and it never will get better for anybody who fights. I personally like Cody Garbrandt. I think he's got a great future in this sport. I love the way he fights. I love his tattoos. I love his hair. I think he's a cool dude. He's like a cool-looking dude, but I don't think he's going to be able to hit Dominic, man. And it's just, it's crazy to me. And, you know, unfortunately, I went down a path with Alliance where, you know, Dominic's got this great head movement and great movement, but not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. Dominic's got his own style, and it's tailored towards his personal gifts and his personal attributes. And, you know, when I trained there, we didn't really train much defense. I mean, I think I got worse by going down to Alliance, but to each his own. And I'm past that now, and I'm on to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Do you scout out what's going on at 155 pounds in Bellator right now, or is it the type of thing where you train, you're going to get the facts that says, "Hit, this is who you're fighting next. You'll fight that
facts.
Person."
Facts.
Well, I'm
There's
just saying.
Facts.
You know what I mean?
It'll be an email file, Rammer.
Do you scout everybody out, or is it just Michael Chandler doing his thing? You're just going to knock him down when they put him up in front of you.
You know, I mean, I mainly focus on myself because I do, you know, going back to the mixed martial arts journey, I really feel like if I take care of myself, my business, my fight style, my everything, good things are going to happen. But I am looking at the landscape. I mean, obviously, for me, the next fight I want is Josh Thompson. We had a date back in May, and it got postponed or it got canceled. And I think that's the next fight for me. That's the biggest fight, I think, the biggest name in the lightweight division besides Benson. So go ahead and knock Josh off, and then see what's next after that. So I'm kind of looking around. There's some young prospects coming up. There's some guys, Bellator mainstays, who have been around for a little while. But I want Josh next.
Mike, we just want to thank you for that last fight and for all your fights. As you know, you're one of our very favorite fighters, but you're an even better dude, and you're the type of guy that people can learn a lot from.
100%. That's why we wish you nothing but the best. We'll always be rooting for you. You're a class act, and just thank you so much for all the in-cage action you've given us.
Of course. Thank you guys so much, man. I truly mean it, man. The other day I was sitting there, I got goosebumps and got all giddy sitting in the car watching that Fight Network video with my wife, man. It's so great to hear guys like you, the great minds of the sport, the respectable guys in this sport, say such great things about me. So we're just scratching the surface. There's so much more to do, so much more to accomplish, so much more to reach. So I'm excited to do it together. So Mike, thank you, guys.
I'm going to tell you one more thing, brother. Rammer and I are going to commentate one of your fights in the UFC within the next 4 years.
The plan is to be there cage side calling your fights.
We'll be there together, the three of us.
One of the most exciting fighters on the planet, the Bellator lightweight champion, Michael Chandler, coming off that split decision victory at Bellator 165 against the highly rated Benson Henderson. Thanks again so much for the time, Mike.
You got it. Thank you, guys. Have a great one.
You too. Michael Chandler, everybody. Wow, the guy is just such a class act. You know, he really, you can understand why he has achieved everything that he's achieved in mixed martial arts, in his life, because he does seem to push away the negativity. Mm-hmm. He just seems to embrace the positives. He understands the path that he's on, and he just puts in the hard work. And you understand why. It's because, A, he started in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Wrestling taught him the fundamentals of the grind and hard work and working with a team to better yourself. You see the commitment there, talking about being with Neil Melanson for 8 years mm-hmm. as his head coach, and then just trying to figure things out. Extreme Couture, Alliance, Power MMA, yep. Black Zillions, well, all those things.
He wouldn't be a gym jumper. He would be a guy who moves with his coach, mm-hmm. and his coach just is a change of scenery guy or who knows what the deal is, but he moves. He's loyal to this coach. So as the coach moves, he moves with him. We love Mike.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did a breakdown of his before, and I was hoping to break down him and Ben, too. It's just a time issue. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I know.
How much.
I know.
It's nonstop, and it's a pleasure to spend your time watching his fights. It's a pleasure to talk to him. What I found really interesting is lately we, and I know McGregor, Du Ho Choi is talking about this, if you study fighting long enough, and you study, you understand how your body moves, and you understand the technique, and you learn from the coaches. You can't rush this. You have to learn this stuff first for many years. Then you start to become more and more introspective. And you think about the mind. You hear Mike talking about that. And then ultimately, you end up at philosophy. You look at the philosophies of how you live your life and the philosophies of how you learn and the philosophies of sacrifice. And he's talking about a scarcity mindset versus a mindset of plentifulness. He's talking about, how you manage your own thinking. A lot of people go through the world. Most of us, I did only 3 years ago. You go through the world not even thinking you have any influence on your thoughts. You think thoughts just pop up and, that's what it is. So you get mad and you go, it's because you did this. Not realizing that your reaction is in your control if you learn to train it. But you learn, and you can see Mike is far down that path, well, much further than you or I, where he can watch himself have thoughts and ideas. And literally, analytically, look which ones belong in his mind and which ones are only going to take him down a path of negativity. That's a very, very powerful thing. It can be learned without the martial arts. Meditation mm-hmm. takes you there. Reading takes you there. Learning different things of mindfulness. But self-study, the physical, connecting your physical with your mental over years and years. And it doesn't happen. Like, you don't wake up one day and you have that. You're a little more that way than you were 6 months ago. And then a little more that way 6 months later. It's a very powerful thing in happiness.
But don't you think part of it, when you think about the root of it, especially with a lot of the athletes or a lot of individuals that you come across throughout your life, the ones that are truly confident, free thinking, because they have this this confidence that nobody can harm me. Mm-hmm. I can walk through the world and do things, you know, and explore certain things without the risk of physical harm. Now with Michael Chandler, yes, I'm going into a cage. Yeah. And you're choosing a specific path to deal with something. But once he leaves that cage, it's like nobody can hurt me. I think that's one thing that a lot of people, they're concerned with in life is being damaged. So if I try this, whether it's psychologically or physically, because he has all those tools, he can puff out his chest and tackle things.
Yeah, but he's not arrogant or egotistical.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We've talked about this before, and I don't necessarily know if that's connected to it, because there are people who explore their bodies through yoga for mm-hmm. a lifetime and would have no idea how to fight somebody sure. or protect themselves and still have that self-awareness. Like the combat is a separate arm of it, but people learn it through that different, those obstacle courses and jumping and flipping and gymnasts and dancers and people, you know, man bun guys and you self-awareness, understanding, like people don't always realize sort of what you get out of yoga or anything like that. Like when somebody asks you in yoga, martial arts obviously, to press into the outside of your foot so that you can use it for a pose, you've never literally put your brain in the feeling of what it feels like to express that part of your body. When you climb something and a climbing instructor teaches you how to move your hip, you have to put your mind and suddenly you become so physically aware, which changes the way you perceive yourself wandering through the world. You're just this thing wandering through and a stimulus hits you. You just – sometimes you're mad and sometimes you're happy. But, you know, you start to be able to control how you interface with the world. And you hear it from great, you know, martial artists, and you hear it from people who study themselves in whatever way they do. I think the fact that Michael Chandler can kick everybody's ass is cool, but I don't think that's what's necessarily shaping that knowing of himself.
I think one of the reasons why I asked this is, if taking nothing away from yoga people, I know a lot of martial artists that practice yoga, but I'm saying if yoga is your thing, that you've discovered yourself through yoga, and you go into a Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, don't ever go to Dunkin' Donuts.
It's terrible.
And something happens, an altercation. I've been in Starbucks when something's happened.
Yeah.
Doesn't it make you question, oh my God, my own mortality, my own self-preservation? If something happens, I couldn't take care of myself. I might be able to put my leg over my head or bend in a certain way, but I couldn't, if my wife or my kids are there, I don't know if I'd be able to protect them. If you're a guy like Michael Chandler or you're a mixed martial artist, you do have that swagger. You do have that confidence that, you know what? I can protect myself and I can protect anybody else that's with me. And because of that, I can tackle anything.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, you know, last night we're walking home and there was some weird, really weird
wife.
Guy. Yeah, me and my wife, Erica. And we're walking home and there's a really weird guy in the corner. And as we walked away, she said, it was, you know, because we looked at each other. She's like, it was weird, eh, that both you and I like picked up on that sketchiness together. And I'm like, well, not really. He was clearly on meth. Like, it wasn't weird at all. Like, he's wearing a trench coat, twitching and stuff. It's like, he's clearly on meth. Like, it's not weird that we picked it up. And she said, what did you think? I said, I just calmly think, you know, if something happens, I'll protect Erica. You know what people do. They grab this way or that. There's only like 8 choices that people do. And I mean, when you've sparred with UFC fighters and were capable
of
protecting.
That's what I mean.
But, I mean,
because Erica didn't have – if you weren't there with her, would she necessarily have that feeling that, you know what? This scenario, I'm fine something happens.
But if you got a calmness to you, that corner, there was, you know, a lot of places to go. You could – maybe she just wouldn't have walked to that corner. She would have made another choice. But I know your point. There's no doubt that – but most people don't know how to fight, you know. Most of the world doesn't know how to fight at all. It's just something that, you know, you don't have to learn until ever you grow up, and maybe you throw a punch or two and mistakenly you think that's fighting, even though you don't understand how to use your body to generate force or anything. But I think that's a really cool secondary part of martial arts. I think it starts out as the first part. You go and you study. I'm like, oh, this is so – whether you're trying to defend yourself, you live in an environment where you need to, or it's just like you're kicking pads and it's so cool and you're hitting things and it's so cool. But I think the long term is about self-awareness and about the study of yourself. I mean, I have such a good understanding of what my thumb does, you know, or like what it feels like. I can think and feel my elbow right now. And not everybody can do that. And I know people who get no exercise are like, I can feel my elbow, but it's different. Over time, using your body, you become aware of it in different ways, you know. And I think that's the value. And yogis get that too. And you never know, like if a guy's holding up the Starbucks and you just whip your leg over your head, it might freak him out. He won't shoot you. He'll be like, okay, I'll shoot that guy.
So. I think one of the reasons, and I understand what you're saying, how things become philosophical, because you start martial arts hoping to learn the physical tools.
Yeah.
And once you get a handle on once you start doing it, it's like, oh, I can't wait till somebody tries to mug me. I'm going to kick them in the head. And the more and more you do things and you start training with people that you want to train with, and then somebody tries to threaten you, for example, challenge you, it's like, that's not even anything. Yeah, I get worked over every single day at the gym with these guys. So
can you imagine some drunk guy in a bar, and he's like, what are you looking at, bro? It's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
But you
Chad
need
LaPree's
to have that.
Kicked me in the head. And what are you going to do?
And that's what I mean, is that once you've stored that, it's easy to say, just chill out, man. Yeah. Chill out. This is – you need to go to a martial arts academy.
Yeah, or just, I don't have time for this. Yeah. And you just go away. It's true. But you can learn that you know, through – I think people who meditate enough that they think about their own reactions to things, I'm always shocked. And there's no judgment, but I'm always shocked when you bring something up and you'll say, you know, I don't know why. Like, people are this way to Ronda Rousey. And they're like, well, she brought it on herself. I mean, maybe, but you are choosing to have an emotional response. She didn't make you do anything. So, well, she did. No, she just did stuff, as you observed, and you have no ability to control your angry or emotional or vengeful or vindictive.
But she wants that.
Or mean-spirited. I don't think she does.
No, she does. In order for her to, like you pointed out before, in order for her to be the biggest star in the world, you can't just have a bunch of supporters.
See, but I think this is the issue, is that the things that are true become untrue eventually. So that was true. And to get bigger, I mean, didn't Kanye just check himself into some psych ward or something?
I have no clue.
Yeah, I think so. And seriously, I think that actually has happened. It's hard because we don't consume anything but this, really. But my wife mentioned it. And my first thought was, eventually it's amazing that you have all this conflict around you. You have all this stress and turbulence, and this person loves you and these thousand hate you, and they get emotional, and all of that builds your thing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. Until it's no longer great.
Yeah, that's true.
They're like people like Rhonda, smaller than Kanye or anyone like this. There have never been human beings in existence who have experienced the world from their eyes. Mm-hmm. I know that it sounds crazy to say, and I know it's impossible for us to do it. But if you think if you ask anybody, imagine walking down the street and people want to touch you and hug you and hold you or grab you or take photos. Everywhere you go, always, forever.
Mike Tyson.
Yeah,
remember?
Mike Tyson. Exactly.
Like, to try to comprehend. And this is the thing.
All the time, people will be like, yeah, well, they're your fans. No, but this. Think of it as you. Imagine yourself, instead of going to your job, now for the next 25 years, nonstop, that's going on. But also people over there are going, you fucking homo.
Yeah.
Fuck you. You know, insulting you. Everywhere you go, every minute. So you'd start to, like, be weirded out by it. And I'm not saying you should pity them or anything. Yes, they have millions of dollars, and they did all these things.
And that's what people think, though. People think that they have millions of dollars, so that's fine. Oh, boo-hoo. Yeah. What are they frigging complaining
all
about?
Day,
they're rich.
All day, all the time, forever. The next person, thousands and millions, tens of thousands, and they're yelling at you and they're insulting you. And if you can never be on a social media thing again because they're just nonstop. Like, nobody lives through that, and nobody who says, to boo-hoo, they don't imagine that is now your life forever. All those normal things, you want to go with your mom to the zoo?
Impossible.
Gone. You want to just go to Starbucks? You want to take your dog outside? Nope. Nothing. Forever. Of course that would have, like, however you'd react to that would be abnormal. So Rhonda got herself into that situation, and part of doing it on the way up is, you know, creating the chaos and creating the turbulence and the disruption and the debate and the emotion and the love and the hate. That's part of it. And that's why it worked. I don't think she planned it. She was just marching through the world. You know, I'm fearlessly going to go out and chase my thing, and I don't care who stands in front of me. And then you get to this point, and now it's this fireball that will never ever go away for as long as you live. And no matter what you do, it's all – you feel it from all sides, you know? That's a scary, terrifying thing. And you can go to one of your six mansions, or you can go to that island and be alone on that island. But eventually, wouldn't it be nice to just see an old friend from high school and not have them want to borrow money from you, or not have them want to – you know? It must be freaky.
What's interesting is you mentioned Michael Chandler and how we would love to be able to be the broadcast team when he makes his way to the UFC.
Yeah.
What happens one day? What happens if he's like, but I don't want that. I don't want to be Ronda Rousey. I don't want to be Conor. I'm making good money over here at Bellator and I have good competition. Yeah. I just want to keep doing this.
Well, he's self-aware enough to ask himself those questions. And at 30 years old, Josh Thompson doesn't seem the same. Ben Henderson's still motivated.
Yep.
Josh Thompson doesn't seem like that's the case. He doesn't seem like this is, you know, now, of course, Mike will prepare for the best Josh Thompson. Mm-hmm. And maybe he will – maybe Josh, with the time off, will go, man, I miss just going for it and grinding. And I've never felt – maybe that will happen.
And he's not dumb. He knows who Michael Chandler is. Yeah. If he gets in there less than 100%, whatever that is, he knows he's in for a horrible night.
For sure. So – but then after him, then what? Mike's got – 7 great years left in him. Mm-hmm. 5 years of burning even hotter than he does now, and then a couple of years of, you know, still doing well and analyzing when he wants to get out. And he might want to still do that at the top level. He watched that Connor and Eddie fight, and part of him was just hungry for that. He doesn't necessarily want what Connor has, but he's self-aware enough to ask himself those questions and in control enough of the choices in his life to decide at what turning point you make what choice. It's all just a road. And he's also, because of what he learned from those losses, capable of going, well, I went this way. Actually, it didn't work out. It's not the end of the world. This route is also good. And so he'll find what he wants to find. And he's also asking himself all the right questions at this stage. So if those big things happen, he'll be aware of the pitfalls. I mean, he's asking himself publicly, you know, about making sure you're loyal to your wife and all of these things, because he thinks about them. And you have to. And people who do have the best result further down that road. They have the best result in their life, you know. Me, 60% of our audience made weird and bad and less good choices, whether in their teens or their 20s 100%. Or their 30s. But you learn and you get to be better and you make better choices and find a nice road for yourself that's positive as you get older. This guy's been making those good choices always, you know, always. So he knows where he's going. If Michael Chandler starts getting to, you know, to maybe not quite Ronda Rousey size, but if he found his way up that ladder, he'd know exactly when it was time to not go any further or to retreat or to shut it down a little bit, because he'd be paying attention.
Michael Chandler's opponent at Bellator 165, Ben Henderson, he was one of the big signings of the Bellator organization. You know, I'm sure he could have stayed with the UFC, former lightweight champion, always brings the fire inside of the cage. When you look at his performances, Ben Henderson's inside of the Bellator cage, Pitbull got injured. I would love to see that fight. Pitbull was doing
very good. They will fight again, I'm sure. It makes sense.
I'm sure of it, that fight makes sense. Then Andrei Koroshkov doing his thing. Now Michael Chandler getting the split decision victory. Now we're told it's somewhere around $300,000. More money than he was making in the UFC. If you are the Bellator organization, do you look at this as a bust? It's like, holy cow, we spent more money on this guy than we've spent on any other fighter, and he's lost two of his three fights.
But in the fight with Mike, he was
awesome.
He was awesome. And, you know, the Pitbull fight, I can't see Pitbull carrying that intensity late like Chandler can. So, there's no guarantees, but Ben would get better as that fight would have gone on if it went on. Koroshkov, you just proved how good Koroshkov was. And Chandler, you elevated him by giving him the best Ben Henderson. Ben Henderson showed up with everything he had.
So is that what you're looking at? When you've paid Ben Henderson $300,000+, it's because you know what you're getting with Ben Henderson. This is a championship caliber fighter that's going to bring that type of intensity and preparation inside of the cage. And that when the fans leave whatever casino, it's like, holy cow, that was a hell of a fight.
I think so. I think the business of it is so strange to try to figure out, because there's so many moving parts, you know. And when we as fans look at it, you're like, well, how could they do this with that guy? And it's like, well, there's 400 of them, and this means this, and this causes that. There's so many moving parts. That's why this requires elite expertise to run these things. One of the most – imagine a 17-year-old is just thinking, man, I wish I had Joe Silva's job. They don't really know what Joe Silva's job is. Joe Silva's job is the management of spreadsheets every month after month after month, looking – you got to look ahead to 8 weeks, and you got to look ahead to 12 weeks, and then right now this guy got injured and the only one available is Bigfoot. And it's not a, I wonder what I should do with –
Nick Diaz.
Oh, man. No, it's like just spots all the time, and it's time management and it's manipulation of spaces and spreadsheets. It's not, oh, man, wouldn't it be great if we matched up these two? Or people will be like, why'd they match these two Canadians? I mean, you can take one of – they've just got names on a list, and we don't have to fly them from anywhere. Like, you know, the boss told me I'm only allowed to spend this much on flights now, so I got to use, like, there's so many moving parts. And, you know I've told you the story, and I probably told it on here at the time that we were I was in an Uber, and the guy was 22 years old. Yeah. And we were talking about some business nearby, and he goes, yeah, that's the thing with, like, you know, these businesses, like Mark Cuban running the Knicks or whatever, and all these businesses, like, I could do the job better than these guys do. And he totally believed it. He totally 100% believed the only difference between him and the CEO of Fight Network is that he's not the CEO of Fight Network. And if he was, he'd fix all this nonsense.
I think we have to call that a show. We got to thank Michael Chandler for giving us his time. Next week, I promise you, we're going to be talking about UFC 206. Rashad Evans did not get cleared to fight in Toronto. The fight with Tim Kennedy is off. However, there's a number of great bouts on this card that a lot of people were talking smack about. Again, we got to thank Michael Chandler. Chase for running the board. He's my main man, Robin Black. I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. We'll see you guys next week.